The OTB Brief. Everything you need to know about sport every morning. Need to get on top of the day's sports news? Well, the OTB Brief is the only sports update you'll need every morning. With all the breaking stories, post-match reaction.
They had one more day to rest. We were really in trouble. Really in trouble to build the team.
And the best bits from off the ball, all in a 10-minute podcast.
Oh, sweaty palms. Of course, you guys know what it's like, but... That was nervy.
The OTB Brief, online every morning from 7 a.m. on offtheball.com, the Go Loud app, and everywhere you get your podcasts. The OTB Podcast Network.
The News Round on Off the Ball.
With Gillette, we don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.
This is News Talk.
Yeah, you're very welcome along to the show. Paul McGinley will be with us this hour after Colin Morikawa won the US PGA last night in exceptional fashion. 23 years of age, he's only played in 29 professional tournaments and he's won three of them. This kid is the real deal. Rory O'Connor will be on Monday Night Rugby after 8 o'clock. Also after 8, East Belfast GAA Club came into existence about 10 weeks ago on a whim, as much as anything. There was huge support. Last week, bomb threats were phoned in. We will talk to the founder of the club, Dave McGreevy, about an eventful 10 weeks, to say the least. After 9 o'clock, Dan McDonald joins us. There is much to discuss in the world of football, Champions League included. Also with us, James Horncastle. He will cast his Italian football expertise on the surprise appointment, really, of Andrea Pirlo at Juve. He was hired as the under-23s coach 10 days ago, and now suddenly he is the manager. 53106 is the text number. We're at Off the Ball on Twitter. As ever, Richie McCormick will be along with your news round. Good evening.
How are you, Joe? How are you?
Yeah, good form. Ronan Mullen, hello.
Hi, Joe.
Richie, I'm good at three things. I'm good at playing sport and talking sport.
See what you did there.
Hey, you have passed the Nick Faldo, Phil Mickelson test.
Well done. I called the Morikawa thing last night. I was on your Twitter poll, which I saw garnered, 2,600 and something votes.
Oh, yeah.
I was an early disciple of the Morikawa charge, and right enough it's proved to be. What a talent that boy is.
He's good. If people don't know, by the way, what the Phil Mickelson, Nick Faldo test is, I mean, so the golf was on over the weekend. It is one of the many reasons why the USPGA this year will go down as one of the great majors. So Phil Mickelson was doing some guest punditry on CBS, usually a pretty down the middle kind of an approach on CBS. You know, Jim Nantz in the box, Nick Faldo there, and Phil. None of us want to particularly think about Phil Mickelson's abilities in the bedroom, Richie, but he forced us to do that. There's no two ways about it. He forced us to picture Phil Mickelson, you know, doing his thing. And he makes his joke. It's not a great joke. It's a bit of a dad joke. Poor old Nick Faldo, though. Have a listen.
Phil, great to have you.
Thank you. It's nice to be here. It's there's three things I do well: play golf and talk golf.
What's the third then? You said three things.
Yeah. He was setting you up.
Anyway,
leave that to your imagination, dear boy.
he just drinks.
Leave it to the Englishman, you know.
He drinks well. That went right over my head.
Yeah.
That went up.
Yeah, I saw that.
We'll put it up in a graphic here in a minute.
Okay.
Oh, Phil. In fairness, Richie, come on, touch of magic.
Yeah. Like, to be fair, has Nick Faldo ever been confused with one of the most intelligent men in the world?
Well, I think Faldo's reasonably intelligent. I just think he was so not expecting that kind of a start to Phil Mickelson's hour in the CBS box. I just think he was like earnest and like, oh, what was the third thing? Because he only said two. I don't know if you noticed.
An hour in the box sounds like Phil Mickelson, all right?
Ah, stop now. Come on now. Go home. Stop with that. So, yeah, Colin Morikawa, very, very talented, 23 years of age. He's only played in 29 tournaments. He has won three of them. So this kid is seriously good. This is not a Rich Beam type USPGA winner. This is the first major of .. We don't quite know how many. I mean, it's not going to be 10, but it will be multiple majors, you would think. Paul McGinley will join us in about 15, 20 minutes and give us his take on the USPGA. And then, Ron, we had Champions League. It was a tough weekend for Rafael Varane, I would say.
Yeah, do you think the fact that he's so much credit in the bank is going to distract people from those two horrific mistakes. Do you think if that was, I don't know, just to pick a random name, Joe, David Luiz, who had made those mistakes, do you think there'd be a lot bigger of deal made about it, or do you think he's just going to skate right past this? Because I don't think either of them are excusable. Like, given the first goal in particular, the press was so visible. It wasn't as if he was caught on the hop. City had started the game in that fashion, and it wasn't a surprise to anyone in the Real Madrid team. And then the second one, I think he knew that a mistake was possible here. He was really thinking it through. You could see the frame rate of his decision-making. And I think the idea was fine. The execution left a lot to be desired. But I think it wasn't as if those two mistakes really cost Real Madrid the game. I think City had gears to go there in that game, and they were clearly the better team. They probably made harder work of it than they should have, but I think you have to make them favourites now for the competition.
Yeah, it seems like it's City or Munich. Munich look to be in awesome form. They have been really since about November, December. Hansi Flick is the manager and he's done an incredible job. Even Thomas Muller has been reinvigorated. They just look so fast and powerful and full of confidence. So they were devastating again against Chelsea. But yeah, you would think it's City or Bayern Munich. The Varane thing is just very hard to explain, given his quality. He's a World Cup winner. He's a multiple Champions League winner. I thought Madrid were weirdly flat running in general. I mean, the play leading up to the Varane mistake for the first goal wasn't all that inspiring either. I mean, it was like City were you know, doing the high press, and then they almost kind of looked around and smelt blood and realised they're just doddering here, Real Madrid, and that mistake was going to come from somebody.
Yeah, and for all the, like, I think tactical acumen has never been levelled as a strong suit of Zinedine Zidane. It's somewhat unfairly given the cast of trophies he's managed to get to the club in his time there, but when it came to a pressure situation, he reverted to that tried and tested midfield three, and it's probably one season too long to be relying on the likes of Kroos and Modric, like, stupendous players though they are. You know, I think Man City have probably evolved a little bit beyond that, the high pace they bring to the middle third in particular. And then, like, it goes without saying, Ronaldo's not the most easy player to replace. I think when Ronaldo stepped away, the assumption at the boardroom level of Real Madrid was, well, let's see what the rest of you guys have got. Gareth Bale, Karim Benzema, let's step up. I think Benzema, to his credit, has filled a void. He's never going to get to Ronaldo's level, but he's certainly chipped in with his fair amount of goals. Bale, needless to say, has not hit those heights. And Eden Hazard has been injury-plagued throughout this first season. So I think Zidane, this is actually his chance to hit the reset button. He wanted to get rid of Bale when he came back to the job and never got his way. So I think this is actually a chance, given that they're league champions, it's easy to forget. But I think this is his chance maybe to put his stamp back on this team.
They were so flat. You mentioned Gareth Bale there. Rich, what is your take on Gareth Bale? Graeme Souness was on OTB AM last week and he said 31-year-old Gareth Bale will regret this. You know, he's taken his youth for granted, and when it's gone, he's going to look back on this window and wonder what he was at.
Yeah, he's going to look back on the last couple of years and he will have a regret, as Graeme Souness says. And I think the tide of public opinion has probably swayed towards that of Real Madrid, or just the need to see what is, you know, in essence, a very talented player actually play football and actually wants to play football. One of the things that goes along with being a professional football and your massive wages is that you actually have to do a bit. And he's not at the moment. And whether that's by the design of Zinedine Zidane or conspiracy between the two of them because Bale and him don't get on or don't fit his system, etc., etc., it's time to move on. And you need to have a deal of professional pride and go off and do your job to the best of your abilities somewhere else, and not just settle for, like, people will listen in tonight and go, oh, well, he's on 250 grand a week or whatever it is, and could you blame him for taking that? Like, on one hand, no, but on the other hand, you want to be seen to be doing something for that money, because, like, I don't want to tie it into at the moment, but especially at the moment when people are kind of worrying about jobs and worrying about what lies ahead, for somebody to be just really blithely taking in 250 grand a week or 300 grand a week for doing nothing, and literally doing nothing, it does stick in the craw a little bit.
The saddest thing, Richie, is he wouldn't get out of bed for 250 grand a week. He's on 600 grand a week. I mean, 200 grand a week, don't insult the man. He nearly crashed his car. There's a text in. Richie, as much as I hate Nick Faldo, and my hatred is eternal ever since the Ryder Cup, he sabotaged, he's no dummy. I suspect he was throwing Phil under the bus by deadpanning him. Phil's known to be a smart ass. Faldo probably wanted to put him in his place, from Rog, but not, he says here, the Rog. Can we get the Rog's opinion on the Faldo-Mikkelsen situation?
I think Rog here is giving Nick Faldo far too much credit.
I think it's somewhere in between. So you're saying Nick's a dummy, and Rog thinks he's you know, he is playing Phil. I think he's a pretty intelligent fella, but you just don't expect Phil to come on and make a joke about his sexual prowess next to Jim Nance straight out the gate. I just think he was like not even thinking that. He was like just a very honest earnest. That's two. And then Nance tried to save him by saying he's setting you up. Nick. And then Nick said,
come on.
Well, what's the third thing? And Nan says, it's a joke. Oh, God. One of the many reasons golf is the greatest sport in the world. On that note, Richie. Gillette, we don't just play the game, we change it, made of what matters. Let's start this news round.
Manchester United in Europa League quarterfinal action tonight. The competition will play out as a series of one-legged matches in Germany over the next 11 nights. Cologne is the venue for United's meeting with Copenhagen tonight. United line out with Sergio Romero in goal, a back four of Aaron Wan-Bissaka, Eric Bailly, Harry Maguire and Brandon Williams. Paul Pogba and Fred are in midfield. In front of them, the trio of Mason Greenwood, Bruno Fernandes and Marcus Rashford, with Anthony Martial leading the line. Meanwhile, in Dusseldorf, Inter face Bayer Leverkusen, and both of those games kick off at 8 o'clock.
Are we pumped here, Ronan?
It seems like the kind of banana skin that Manchester United would routinely slip over in the last couple of years, but you'd like to think, given the progress they've made since lockdown, that they should brush Copenhagen aside, but you just never know. I saw the UEFA Twitter account tweeted out the last meeting of these two teams, Joe, was 06-07. Paul's goal scored for United at Old Trafford. The other two goal scorers, less common, John O'Shea scored. If people think of Gianfranco Zola's little flick against Norwich at the near post, it was kind of like that, except totally unintentional. The ball comes in from a corner and hits John O'Shea in that fashion and goes into the net. And needless to say, he claims total credit for it. And then the third goal to round off the victory, Kieran Richardson. So That puts a timestamp on where things have gone in the last 14 years or so. But
it really does.
I think this United team should deal with them easy enough. Guillermo Varela, Richie, I think, is the only notable name that I can spot from that Copenhagen team. Formerly of Manchester United, I think Felipe Coutinho took his lunch money at Old Trafford in a Europa League game, and that was the end of Varela at Old Trafford. But apart from that, they don't have many star-studded names. They've actually done very well to get here into this stage of the competition, so... hopefully, I'd say United should do the business tonight.
Where is Kieran Richardson this weather? 35 years of age, 8 England caps. God, yep. Kieran. I think he's retired, is he?
I think he's retired.
He's last at Cardiff. He made 6 appearances. There we
go. Yeah, I think he's gone, yeah.
That unbelievable day when he went to West Brom and kept them up. The original Great Escape in the Premier League, when I think they were the team that were bottom at Christmas. And he went there on loan in January and scored the goal in the final day that kept him up. So he'd probably be remembered more for that than anything he did for United, I think.
It says in Wikipedia, so, you know. But it says here that he's a born-again Christian. Did you know
good
this?
Good for him.
In 07, I just want to praise Jesus Christ and go to heaven. That's all I care about.
I do, Joe.
Did not know that. Okay. So where we go next?
Some transfer news in and out. Borussia Dortmund sporting director Michael Zorc says Jadon Sancho is going nowhere. The England international is the primary transfer target of Manchester United this summer. It's believed United have fallen short of Dortmund's valuation of Sancho in their dealings so far. Sancho joined the rest of the Dortmund squad in Switzerland today for the start of their pre-season training camp, and Zorc says Sancho will be staying with the Bundesliga side for the upcoming season. One piece of transfer news that's just gone through as we've been rabbiting on here, Joe: Liverpool have completed the signing of left back Kostas Tsimikas from Olympiacos for a long-term deal. The 24-year-old effectively will be serving as Andy Robertson's understudy at left-back for the Premier League champions.
Okay, very good. Where are we going next?
To Ballybuffet, this season's FAI Cup getting underway there this evening. Finn Harps entertaining St. Pat's with kick-off at 7:45. Shamrock Rovers, meanwhile, will be the only SSE or Tristy Premier Division sides to play their Europa League qualifier at home. All qualifying rounds are one-legged affairs due to COVID-19-related travel restrictions. So Rovers will welcome the Finnish side Ilves Tampere to Dublin. Bohemians' first European trip in 8 years will take them to Hungary to face Fehivar, while Derry City are jetting off to Lithuania to face Riteris. All those first-round qualifying ties will be played on August the 3rd. And should Dundalk win away to Slovenian champions Celje, they'll be at home to either Molde of Norway or the Finns of KUPS in the second qualifying round of the Champions League.
Ronan, I don't expect you to have an in-depth knowledge of these lesser-known European teams, but is this generally regarded as an okay-ish draw for the Irish sides, or what's been the reaction?
Well, from a Dundalk point of view, I think it's a reasonable draw. I think if they come through this one, they'll have a more of a winnable home tie in the second round. So it's a pathway to progression in the qualifiers, but not necessarily a shoe-in. Certainly the way Dundalk are playing, Richie can speak to Bowes gave them a bit of a run around, especially in the first half the other day. Dundalk finished strongly, but they've, even before lockdown, they probably hadn't started the season in the fashion they'd be hoping to do. And they've always been built, even in Stephen Kenny days, for more of a long-term marathon type season. And this is very much not the case. Obviously, it's more of a sprint, and Rovers are looking very impressive. Bowes, Richie, I will mention Bowes are in the title race. This time.
Very much in the title race.
They're not, though. What's the verdict on Dundalk's mediocre form, Richie?
But like, personally speaking, from the outside looking in, I think that they have strengthened in some very strange areas over the past while. Like, Ronan would be able to speak to this better than me, but seeing them sign someone like Dave McMillan, who is, you know, without doubt one of the best strikers to have appeared in the league over the last few years, but he's been a couple of years away over in Scotland at St Johnstone in particular. He's come back to Dundalk, who he, you know, represented with such great esteem those years prior. But it just seemed like a pointless signing to me. And there have been a couple of them from Dundalk's point of view over the last while. Whereas I think we saw on Friday night areas that they potentially needed to strengthen, or at least to kind of offer some depth. Sean Gannon, who has been like an amazing fullback over the past while, was turned in and out by Chris Twardek on the left-hand side. And they looked pretty weak and pretty susceptible down the flanks on Friday. But they just, for my money anyway, they needed to replenish the squad, and they seem to have done it in some strange areas over the past 18 months.
You've got us some Morikawa and some Rory from Hardin Park, hasn't it?
The American Colin Morikawa carded a final round 64 last night to win the PGA Championship at Hardin Park. The 23-year-old, who was playing in just his second major, finished up on 13 under par, two clear of Dustin Johnson and Paul Casey. After his round, Morikawa found it difficult to sum up his feelings at winning his first major.
I'm on cloud nine. I don't know about you guys, but yeah, you know, I've believed in myself since day one, and I've said it. When we sat down, I specifically remember at Travelers, the four of us, me, Wolf, Victor, and Justin Suh, and I just told everyone, you know, all four of us, and obviously we've all had some pretty good paths, Justin struggling a little bit, but we all believed since day one that we can do this. And, you know, I haven't let up from that. I feel very comfortable in this position, but it was going to take a very, very good round today. And I knew with the leaderboard, the way it was looking, and everyone out there, you just had to play well. You know, it's you either win or you lose. And, you know, I got off to a little shaky start, made the putt on one, and, you know, went full steam ahead there.
Well, from then, at that point on, he didn't miss a shot. I mean, he flushed every ball, bar the 14th, which led to a chip-in birdie. But, I mean, he was just so composed under pressure. He's not a bomber, Morikawa. He hits it 296 yards average off the tee, which is kind of acceptable these days on the PGA Tour. It's like not embarrassing. It's not going to rule you out of tournaments. But he just found every fairway, basically, and it was a really hard course to find fairways on. He had 14 of 16 fairways, which was streets ahead of everybody. He shot a 65 on Saturday. He shot a 64 on Sunday. That total of 129 is the lowest weekend score in a major ever. Ever, ever, ever. That's how good the play was in his final 27 holes across Saturday and Sunday. He didn't have a bogey. He picked up 12 shots. This was awesome. And even with that brilliant play, it still took balls on 16 to win the tournament. I mean, this was a bunch leaderboard. If you didn't see it, I suspect a lot of you didn't at 2 a.m. last night. And he was one shot clear. He'd managed to play brilliantly to get one shot clear. And on 16, he took the really gutsy decision, play driver, risk a bogey, and he stitched it from close to 300 yards for an eagle put from 7 feet, which he duly holed, won the tournament by two shots. That is an absolutely incredible way to win. Paul Casey, who was his nearest competitor at that stage, was on the 17th tee, and he looked forlornly as Morikawa did what he did on 16. So that was awesome, and we'll talk to McGinley about that, and Richie, Rory McIlroy.
6 years and counting for a major win for Rory McIlroy. The world number three finished up on 2 under par. Shane Lowry ended the weekend on 3 over. McIlroy had this blunt response when asked why he's underperformed in majors in recent years.
I don't know. Maybe I'm just not as good as I used to be. I don't know. I really don't know. I feel like the golf that I've played in the majors is been sort of similar to the golf I've played outside of them, and I've won some big events and played well, and you know, had a good season last season. I can't really put my finger on it. I go out there and try my best every single day. You know, some days I play better than others, and
you know, just got to keep going and keep persisting and, you know, see if you can do better the next time.
We'll put all that to Paul McGinley in the next few minutes. Rich, we'll finish up with Ronnie.
Yeah, he ended the afternoon session 6-2 down to Mark Williams in their World Snooker Championship quarterfinal. At the combined age of 90, the pair have 8 World Championships between them. O'Sullivan was asked by MC Rob Walker last night if he's surprised that the likes of himself and Williams are still at the business end of world ranking events.
Probably if you asked me then, no. But then when you look at the standard of play, then I'd say yeah, you know, because like I said, you know, even people like me and John and Mark, you know, if you look at the younger players coming through, then they're not that good, really. Do you know what I mean? And most of them are like, you know, wouldn't even make. They'd probably do well as half decent amateurs. Do you know what I'm saying? Well, not even amateurs. I mean, they're so bad that, you know, a lot of them that you see now, you just think, Kai, I've probably got to lose an arm and a leg to sort of fall outside the top 50. Do you know what I mean? So that's really sort of why we're kind of hovering still around, because of the. Just how poor it is down that end, you know.
It's not that bad. Well, anyway, thanks, Ronnie. We're looking forward to that epic quarterfinal. Yeah. Two old guys going toe to toe. Well done tonight.
Gracias.
Gracias. The lads of Ken Doherty on OTBAM tomorrow, so he's going to talk about that. What do we think, Ronan? Is this trolling of the highest order, or is this the blunt truth?
That's sensational stuff. I don't know. Sometimes I get the impression I think he's a little bit self-aware now. He knows his clips go viral, but there was definitely an element of truth in what he was saying. I think he was trying to get that point across. And it is true, because you look at the top 15, there's only 2 lads in the top 15 under 30. And like O'Sullivan, I think he won his first World Championships 19 years ago. And that his generation, the likes of Higgins, Doherty and so on, are products of the heady days of snooker when it was, you know, everyone was watching it, and that's obviously not the case now. So needless to say, the generation of British and Irish players that were sort of spawned from that era it's not going to be the same. Same level of talent isn't going to be inspired to pick up a snooker cue in the way those guys were. So I think there is some truth in it, but it's just the way he delivered it I thought was exceptional, and only Ronnie O'Sullivan could probably go viral in the snooker world these days.
It is true. This plane air from the back business will give a team more problems than solutions over the course of the season. The tracksuit Sunday Park coaches trying to implement the system with underrates are deluded. No, they're not. This is exactly what we want our underrates doing. Come on. Ronan is the head of Andy Robertson. Has he heard that before, I wonder? I mean, you're not. You're
Andy Robertson?
No, not a chance. And then there's another comment on YouTube saying, I'll raise you Bernard Dunn. Again, I just don't think either.
I don't think Andy Robertson and Bernard Dunn look anything alike, so I don't. That's the real issue there.
And either do you. I mean, like, these are 3 people and they don't look remotely similar. We're going to go to Paul McGinley. Richie, thank you.
Cheers, lads.
Ronan, thank you. There's a text in from Keith. There's only one thing better than a cracker of a joke. That's a joke so bad it makes you wince when you remember it 3 weeks later. That Mickelson atrocity falls into the latter category, but it still entertained me over the weekend. Well, indeed. Paul McGinley next.
Phil, great to have you.
Thank you. It's nice to be here. There's 3 things I do well. Play golf and talk golf.
What's the third then? You said 3 things.
Yeah. He was setting you up.
Anyway.
Leave that to your imagination, dear boy.
Leave
it to the Englishman, you know?
He drinks well. That went right over my head. Yeah. That went up.
Yeah, I saw that.
We'll put it up in a graphic here in a minute.
Okay.
The News Rant on Off the Ball.
With Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.